Okay, welcome everybody to today's teleseminar called How to Get a Good Night's Sleep. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now I'll be introducing our very special guest Donna Corrie, but before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work today, particularly if this is your first PeopleYouShouldMeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Donna a whole series of questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the website by you, our listeners. Now, Donna and I have been friends for about 6 months now, and we've never actually met in person, but we've had lots of really inspiring chats over Skype. And her way of being and all her knowledge and expertise is an area that I think will be of absolute fascination to you all this evening, as it is for myself. Now, I guess in the world of health, we hear lots of information about the importance of diet and food and exercise and breathing in terms of actually building up health and wellness naturally. But one area that I believe we don't actually hear enough about is actually how to really sleep well. And the fact that Donna has such a vast array of expertise in this area is really very exciting. And we're going to learn some very interesting pointers this evening or today, wherever you are. Now, over the past 14 years, Donna has worked as a therapist, trainer and presenter all around the world in countries such as Australia, all through Europe and New Zealand as well. She has pioneered her own unique natural sleep method, which she has developed through years of experience and observation of what truly works. And she's also currently writing her first book called Sleeping Well Naturally. And without further ado, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call our very special guest, Donna Corrie. How are you doing there, Donna?
I'm good. I'm really good. It's very early in the morning, so it's quiet, except for one bird that likes to wake me up.
It's a bit of irony, the fact that we've woken you at 3 a.m. in the morning in Bali to speak on how to get a good night's sleep, but we really appreciate that you've got up for us to share this valuable information.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Now, Donna, I actually just wanted to kick us off at the top and ask you what actually constitutes a good night's sleep and also why is it so important for our long-term health?
Okay, well, while we're asleep, our bodies regenerate and healing that needs to happen happens when our immune system is functioning well, when we're living well during the day and we can go into a deep enough state of sleep, then a lot of things happen in the body that we need to be well. So there's restoration, healing, and the mind is also emptied, and a lot of things happen mentally that enable us to wake up clear and ready for new information. So information is kind of processed and then we wake up with a mind that can take in more information. A lot of people can relate to the feeling of being over full, not being able to take anything in, not being able to make sense of things when they're tired, and then waking up ready to go again. So we receive mental and physical restoration while we're sleeping. And when we don't get enough sleep, we suffer in many ways. Most people can relate to not being mentally alert and clear when they don't get enough sleep and finding it hard to make decisions. Reflexes become slower, so it becomes dangerous to do something. And often illnesses linger when we're not getting enough sleep. We don't quite get over things. And so our health deteriorates if we suffer from lack of sleep for a long period of time. And this can be quite serious after years and years. A lot of my clients come with very serious health issues, and there's been a lot of research done to prove that people who aren't getting sufficient sleep are more prone to quite serious illness such as heart disease and cancer and those kinds of things. So yeah, it is a lot more serious than people think. We suffer from a lot more than just feeling tired and run down in the long run. So, and there's been a lot of research done. There was a study done involving 1 million adults, and that was done over a year, and to show what the effect of lack of sleep is, and they found that there was an increased death rate for people who were getting under 5 hours sleep a night. So, but you know what good sleep is, and this is a question I'm asked a lot, because a lot of people will sleep, but they'll sleep very lightly. So they don't actually go into the deeper stages of sleep, and this can be caused by high stress levels, a central nervous system that's not calm, and just not being able to, and a body that's too tense to really let go, and overactive mind. I'd say 80% of people that I see privately, and also when I do my talks and seminars, 80% of people know that it's an over-busy, over-stimulated mind that's stopping them from falling into a very deep sleep.
Well, like some very good points that you brought up there, Donna. And I guess like a lot of them seem quite contextual and very, very important to our modern-day living. Like we're in the information age, and it's almost like we're bombarded with information from all different corners of our waking moments. And, and lots of that information will actually result in an overactive mind and being overstimulated as well. And I was just wondering, like in this context of modern-day living and the hustle and bustle of this kind of existence, is like a good night's sleep really possible, or is it just something that we need to just adjust to or adapt to?
Yes, it is possible. We need to change our kind of constant stimulation and need for entertainment and, you could say, distraction, and just take some time, not very long, in the evening to wind down. So a lot of people have forgotten how to really wind down naturally without having a drink or watching TV, or they're the main things that people do in the evening. A lot of people are on their computers right until they go to bed, or talking. Lots of stimulating activities are happening at night. People are on their cell phones, especially teenagers, in bed. And often that's keeping them awake. I mean, even the light that they're exposed to from, or people are exposed to from, mobile phones and computers and TVs is having a huge effect. So there are some very simple things you can do to improve the quality of sleep. One of them is that you decrease your exposure to light in the evening. And unfortunately, because we have light and we can turn lights on whenever we want, and often lights are quite bright in people's homes, that exposure to light keeps the production of hormones that we're supposed to have during the day to wake us up and make us alert, that also inhibit the production of hormones we need to fall asleep. So simply lowering your exposure to light once the sun goes down will help you get a better sleep. And I'm talking about lights in your home, lights from a computer, lights from a phone, any kind of light.
Great. And Donna, I was just curious how you actually became interested in this field. Have you always been someone that slept perfectly, or have you been on a journey, I guess like a personal journey, to discover what perfect sleep actually is?
Yeah, well, I had insomnia as a child for probably from the age of about 9 or 10, and it lasted around 10 years. So I was a very active child. I was always I was very creative and I was always working on lots of projects and excited about everything I was doing. And I'd get into bed and I'd read for at least an hour, often two. And then by the time I went, tried to sleep, I would just lie there for a very long time, not able to quiet my mind. And I remember what it was like. And it was, I remember feeling really frustrated, exhausted, and kind of overrun by thoughts. Sometimes they were pleasant, like very creative thoughts, and sometimes I was just running over things over and over again. And there was no one really to help me. I'd ask my parents, but they'd tell me, don't read so much, or just think of nice things, or but they usually couldn't really help me. So, and it changed when I was in my early 20s, and I had a breakdown, which I see was from a long-term lack of sleep and just doing too much, and my body couldn't cope anymore. So I had to stop what I was doing, and I started to learn natural therapies to heal myself of several illnesses that I had by then. And then I got very passionate about sharing what I'd learned with teenagers and children. So I began teaching in schools, and basically I was specializing in the area of stress and self-care for teaching kids how to stay balanced and well, and I really enjoyed that. And then I ended up working with adults and teaching classes, and also how to minimize stress and manage stress. And when I moved to Europe, I found that a lot of the adults I was working with were telling me I'm sleeping better. My sleep's improved. And so I began to become interested in the relationship between stress, excessive stress, and sleeplessness or insomnia, and found that the things that I was developing were really helping sleep. So I began to specialize more. I studied more in that area. And now I work mainly with people with sleeping problems. And there is definitely a relationship between excessive stress and insomnia. So for different reasons. That's how I got into it.
Wow, so it definitely sounds very, very grounded in personal experience and also the observation of others as well.
Yes.
Yeah. I was going to say, Donna, you mentioned earlier on that I guess one of the challenges of sleep deprivation is that it can inhibit people going to deeper stages of sleep. And I was just wondering if you could actually share with people what are the different, I guess, the stages or different elements of sleep.
So there are five different stages of sleep. And the initial stage of sleep is it's like a transitional period between being awake and asleep, and your brain waves slow down, and this stage should only last about 5 to 10 minutes. And if it takes you, say, longer than 15 minutes to get to sleep, then it shows that there's an issue. Stage two is a stage of sleep where your body temperature starts to decrease and your heart rate slows, and there are little bursts of rhythmic brain activity. And they've been called sleep spindles, but basically you kind of, your brain waves start really changing then. And then you go into another transitional stage, which is stage three, and that transition is between light sleep and very deep sleep. And delta waves begin emerging during this stage. So these names that I'm saying, delta and theta, these are names that have been given to different brain states, you could say. Then you go into stage four, which is sometimes called delta sleep, because very slow delta brainwaves occur during this time. And this stage lasts about 30 minutes. It's a very deep stage of sleep where we get a lot of rejuvenation. And stage five is, a lot of people know about REM, rapid eye movement sleep.
Mm.
There's increased brain activity, but a lot of dreaming occurs.
Mm.
This can be called, this is kind of known as kind of a paradoxical sleep, because the brain is active, but the body is very relaxed.
Mm.
And we don't go through these stages, like during the night, just through one to five, and that's it. We progress. We always begin in stage one. And a lot of people who are having sleeping problems stay in stage one for a very long time.
Mm.
And get emotional and upset, and really stops them from going into the deeper stages of sleep. But we go through stage one, go into stages two, three, and four, and then we repeat stages three and two before we enter REM sleep.
Mm.
And each time we enter REM sleep, we stay in there for longer periods of time. So the first time we get to REM, it's not so long, and then as we progress through the night, as we repeat these stages of sleep, we stay in REM longer and longer until we're in there for about 90 minutes.
Wow.
So it's not what people think. We don't just go into a deep sleep and stay there for as long as we can and then come out of it. We're actually cycling through these five stages of sleep several times during the night.
Wow. And where does most of the natural repair of the body and mind occur? Is it the REM sleep, or is it the whole process?
Yeah, it's REM, and it's stage four, that very deep sleep. But when people are not relaxing sufficiently before they go to sleep, REM sleep can be quite stimulating.
Mm.
So you get disturbed dreams, or, you know, the mental activity becomes too much and often wakes people up. People are woken up by the processing that's happening, and then they start their own processing, so planning for the day ahead or the years ahead, or going over things that happened during the day before, and this stops them from going into very deep stages of sleep. And a lot of people aren't even getting into the really deep stage of sleep.
Mm.
So that's why people often wake up feeling really exhausted,
mm.
like they haven't slept at all. There's different reasons for that. Sometimes it's people have sleep apnea or breathing problems, and they're not getting enough oxygen during the night, or blood sugar levels are really dropping really low because they haven't eaten well during the day, or they've eaten a lot of sugar in the night. So there's lots of different factors that can come into it, into why people aren't getting very deep sleep.
Mm. Now, say for someone sitting at home who may be aware of the fact that they're not sleeping as well as they'd like, how would they actually take that first step to start navigating back to this deep and healing sleep?
Well, the main things that I talk about generally to help people start improving their sleep are lowering exposure to light, because light has an effect on us chemically and hormonally. And the hormones we need to sleep really deeply don't get produced when we're exposed to light, as I mentioned earlier.
Mm.
So to start really decreasing exposure to light as early as possible in the evening, but at least an hour before bed.
Mm.
So going into a dimly lit room, even so if you have a lamp, turning it towards the wall. And this works amazingly with children. So a lot of children are exposed to really bright light, lots of bright sound, and because they're put to bed quite early.
Mm.
So they're running around. They're often eating, watching TV, and then they're told, okay, get to bed. So they're going from full activation to, you know, of course they're going to resist going to sleep because they've actually had a wind down time. So, and adults are often the same, or they'll just be in front of the television, which is actually stimulating on a lot of levels.
Mm.
So, you know, we can be watching images, even though we're not moving our bodies, a lot of things are being stimulated in our minds.
Mm.
So, you know, we're making associations, or we've got emotions being stirred up by what we're seeing. There's not a lot on the television that makes you feel really calm and tranquil and ready to just drift off into a very peaceful sleep.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a lot of murder, and even the late night news, a lot of people are watching the news right before they're going to bed and feeling quite upset by things that are happening in the world, and then their own personal worries and fears on top of that. So lowering exposure to light, getting away from the TV, having some really quality wind down time so that you relax your body, there's physical tension, empty your mind, and then if there's emotions, to just work through some things and calm your heart down. And a lot of people are having this wind down time once they get into bed.
Mm.
So that's why they can't fall asleep straight away.
Right.
So reducing exposure to light, reducing stimulation in the evening, and having quality wind down time are the three main things that I suggest.
Mm. No,
and you can learn to do these things. It's not something unlearnable.
Uh-huh. So. Now, lots of people talk about just the timing with sleep. Is there a good time to go to bed and a good time to wake, or does this vary from person to person?
Well, we all have, I call them sleepy cycles, and these are kind of cycles of feeling energized and a little bit tired, and they do actually keep going through the day, and different people have different lengths of these sleepy cycles, so they'll feel quite focused and able to really get a lot done for a certain length of time, and then they'll feel a little bit drowsy or not as clear and focused. And this cycle of like wakefulness and then say feeling a little bit tired is different for different people. For some people it's 1 hour, for some people it's 2, and then this can differ to different people. So as you're going to sleep in the night, to follow your sleepy cycle is very helpful. This is kind of an intro into what you asked me about, length of sleep, but following your own sleepy cycle is important. So people will find they get, like, say, sleepy around 9.
Mm.
And if they miss that wave of sleepiness, then they don't fall asleep or want to sleep again for an hour or 2.
Mm.
So people often call this a second wind that comes
mm.
when you miss that wave of sleepiness. And people who have a long sleepy cycle, so like it's 2 hours, it can be really hard for them because then it gets very late, they get very exhausted and they can't fall asleep.
Mm.
And there's a lot of, there's been a lot of different research done on how much sleep we need.
Mm.
So generally it's between 7 and 8 hours is the optimal amount of sleep we need. Now, when we're younger, so teenagers need more sleep because they're growing, physically growing. So they need more time of sleep so their body can do everything it needs to do. I mean, it's amazing what's happening when a person is, you know, a body is growing, literally. So that's why a baby sleeps so much of the day.
Mm.
And then we need less and less sleep as we become an adult. And then adults need between 7 and 8 hours. We shouldn't sleep longer than that. And people often say that, you know, they feel groggy or not so well when they sleep longer than that.
Mm.
My opinion is that about 7.5 hours is optimum.
Mm.
But if we're ill, we need more sleep. If we're doing a lot of hard physical activity, we need more sleep. So it does change person to person, but also depending on our circumstance at the time. And the way to gauge it is to see how you feel. So people generally know how much sleep they need because they feel quite good when they've had that much sleep. And my experience is, and a lot of people that I've worked with, is that getting to sleep before midnight feels a lot better. Night owls will argue that point and say, no, I feel better when I go to sleep at 1 o'clock in the morning. But it all comes down to our body clock, which is like an innate clock that it's a cluster of brain cells in our brain that regulates our body functions. So things that happen every day, like, for instance, when we get hungry, when we get tired, when different hormones are produced, but also body clock affects our heart rate and digestion and lots of different things. So when we are living in tune with our body clock, we go to sleep. We get tired around 9, 9.30, and we go to sleep 10, 10.30.
Mm.
And we wake up around 6, between 6 and 7 in the morning.
Mm. Okay, great.
So, yeah.
Cool. And now, Donna, I was just wondering if you had any case studies that you could share, whether they've been on one of your workshops or one of your private clients of people who've had chronic sleeping problems and then through using these simple and natural methods have been able to transform their experience of sleep.
I've worked with hundreds of people, so people from all walks of life and all ages. And so what's coming to mind now, worked with a lot of mothers and executives. So one client I worked with was running an institute that was actually 150 scientists working for her.
Wow.
She's the CEO of this institute. And she had a lot she was managing. There was, at the time she came to me, there was a lot of change happening within the institute, and funding was being changed. A lot of people's jobs were being jeopardized. So her stress levels had shot up, and she had been managing with about 5 to 6 hours of sleep for a long time. She had had cancer and overcome that, even though she hadn't had enough sleep. And when she came to me, her sleep had gone down to like 4 hours a night or less.
Right.
So this was a case that really required her to change a lot of the way things she was doing and the way she was living, and learn how to lower her stress levels during the day and manage her ability to really unwind in the evening to a point that she could really, really sleep deeply and recover from long-term sleep debt. So when you haven't slept well for a long, long period of time, you have a sleep debt, and then it's like you just can't get over it. So you actually need to sleep a lot more. So she started increasing her hours of sleep slowly, and on weekends allowing herself to nap. I'd like to come back to that.
Mm.
So napping. A lot of people have that question, is napping good?
Mm.
And then slowly she was able to change the way she was actually feeling during the day and living during the day, and then her patterns during the night. And a lot of people planning in the evening and then wake up planning. And I find a lot of people who are managing companies or in high positions will wake up and just plan because they don't make time during the day for planning.
Mm.
And it's something that's very necessary, obviously, because they're waking up and losing sleep time to do it.
Mm.
So learning how to make that a priority and to manage the need for planning during the day and in the evening, if you don't have time in your work day, doing it before you get into bed, because when you plan in bed in the dark without a pen and paper, then you are not very efficient. So it can take, you can spend 4 hours planning and not really get anywhere, whereas if you're doing it with a pen and paper with a clear mind, less than 20 minutes and you've got something sorted. So learning new skills, so to lower stress levels during the day, calm the body, mind and heart down in the evening. And then if you do wake up in the evening, how to manage that. So this person that I worked with learnt those things and changed her sleeping pattern and was able to stay at work and live a very healthy life. And then I've had quite a lot of mothers come to me, mothers of young children or quite a few young children who've gotten into broken sleeping patterns through being a mother, because of course they're waking up all through the night to feed the baby or see to their children as they have more children, so their body gets used to a broken sleeping pattern. And I've had many women come to me who've had 10 or more years of broken sleep, even 20, after having their first child, because their body gets so into this rhythm, or they're constantly thinking of the child and if it's okay and or if they're okay, and so they get into these broken sleeping patterns and then they never change them. And then often, you know, people are only offered sleeping pills, or basically sleeping pills if they go to a doctor, and take them out of desperation and the feeling or belief that there's no other option. And then it's not helping, or it might help for a short length of time, and then they keep taking them hoping that they'll keep helping, but then they get side effects from the sleeping tablets and it all becomes quite detrimental, really, and not helpful. But I get a lot of people come to me who are still taking sleeping pills even though they're not sleeping well. So I never say to people, stop sleeping pills straight away. I gently wean them off as they feel more secure in their new skills and their new patterns. And people often just do it naturally anyway, let go of that dependence on sleeping pills, which are usually not really helping. I mean, there are a couple of the questions that came in. People said, look, I'm taking sleeping pills, but they're still not helping me anyway. But it's out of that sense of desperation and really hoping they're going to help. So, yeah.
Okay, great. So that's probably the perfect time to actually bring in some of the questions that came in. We had a phenomenal array of questions that came in. And I guess one of the things we mentioned in the copy was the fact that 50% of the adult population has some kind of sleeping difficulty. So it is a topic that is has been heavily subscribed this week, and also some really great questions that came through as well. So I thought I'd just actually kick you off with a question from Andrew, who is in South Africa. And Andrew asks, what is the relationship between longevity and hours of sleep?
Okay, so I'm going to come back to this study that was done with the million adults that I mentioned. It was done in a way that measured health and longevity, you could say, so how long people were living for. And it was done over a 6-year period. And they found that people who were getting under 5 hours sleep were suffering from illnesses that did lead often to death or a very decreased, how do you say, quality of life. So he's asked specifically about longevity, but quality of life is an important thing here. You know, when people aren't sleeping well, the quality of life is really decreased, and then often the people around them are suffering because of it as well. Their quality of life decreases as well. So, you know, children who have mothers who are exhausted, you know, they're not getting that quality time, and often the patients and the mother, if the mother is not well, then the child also suffers. And then also people who are working with people who are sleep deprived, they're, you know, often getting snapped at or not getting clear instructions or all kinds of things. So, yeah, I've come away from the longevity issue, but basically it's been proven that if you're not getting enough sleep, sufficient sleep, so 7 to 8 hours of sleep, then your immune function lowers, decreases, you don't get over illnesses completely, and you can get quite serious illnesses that lead to death. So that sounds very morbid, but it's true.
But it certainly, I guess, really brings it into attention that it is something that is, that's not, like, I guess, like, it's important to actually address it rather than overlooking it.
Yeah, it's like, not like something to take lightly at all. And, you know, the amount of people that come to me who've been suffering for more than 10 years is huge. And the thing is that once people learn what they need to do, it can change quite quickly. You know, that's one of the reasons I'm writing a book, because sessions just, I only need 2 or 3 sessions with people, that's the usual, before they actually change very long-term sleeping patterns that are not good.
Wow,
so
that's amazing.
It really is possible to change it, and quickly, when you know what you need to do.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, this one comes from Phil, who is in the United Kingdom, and Phil asks, how do I stop the cycles I go through of manic-inspired work? During these periods, I have little, if any, sleep. These can last for a week or two at a time. I achieve an incredible amount, but I am exhausted afterwards.
Okay, so this is a good question, because it brings up that whole issue around cycles and patterns. So he is changing his body clock and his cycles.
Mm.
He doesn't say how often, every time he goes into this manic way of working. So he would probably be waking up at different times, going to sleep at different times, probably waking up in the night when he's really into his work and thinking about things and brainstorming things and really changing his rhythms.
Mm.
And so having your body clock running smoothly and consistently is the thing to do. So to not have these periods of manicness. So he's actually said manicness. A lot of people are living manically all the time. But to not change your rhythm so radically. You can change your rhythm a little bit and then manage that by supporting your central nervous system and having your wind down time, but not to take it to the extreme and just live very differently. So your body then has to adjust all the time to these different rhythms, different times of waking, different times of sleeping.
Mm.
And I did mention that I was going to talk about how to set the body clock. Mm. One very important thing to do is to always wake up at the same time. So when you wake up is when the body clock is set. People who are waking up at different times or waking up late in the day and not getting good exposure to light are not setting their body clocks.
Mm.
So it's really important that you wake up around the same time every day, even on weekends, because that helps keep your body rhythm and body clock consistent, so that Monday's not like a big shock and you feel like death because you have to get up early again.
Mm.
And then having that exposure to light. So in answer to his question, sort of minimizing these big radical shifts of when you're going to sleep, when you're waking up, and keeping yourself fairly consistent with your rhythms will really help.
Excellent. That's a excellent question, Phil. Now, this one comes from N Short, who is in the United Kingdom. And they ask, if one has to go work through the night or has a poor night's sleep, should and how does one have a power nap? We mentioned that earlier. And are these good, useful, real, etc.?
Okay, so naps are good. People ask me all the time, should I sleep during the day? They think, a lot of people think that if they exhaust themselves completely, then they're going to sleep better. But the fact is that when you're totally exhausted, and most people who suffer from insomnia know this, it's really hard to get to sleep because your body is running on adrenaline and quite stressed by this exhausted state. And often there's physical tensions and all kinds of things going on from the pushing that happens when you're exhausted. So naps are good, but the length of nap is the important thing. So if you have a nap that is longer than 15 to 20 minutes, you start going into deeper stages of sleep. So you wake up, when you wake up after an hour, you can wake up, say, from a deep state, and you feel very groggy, and your sleep cycle is interrupted. Whereas if you have a 15 to 20 minute nap, so this person has said power nap, so that's the definition of a power nap, 15 to 20 minutes, not a long nap, then this will actually rejuvenate you, you'll feel mentally more clear and able to keep going without that feeling and being totally exhausted. So power naps are good and useful for people who have sleeping problems, and also if you're working through the night, definitely a power nap's going to help. So what I say to people with napping is set an alarm, because a lot of people just get stressed. Oh no, well then I better not nap because I won't wake up. So set an alarm to wake you up in 15 to 20 minutes. And there's also been a lot of research done and experiments done to prove that napping is really beneficial. And you can look that up even on the net, just power nap. And benefits of power naps. And there's even some corporations that are introducing that as something that people do, and they have napping rooms so that their workers get their clarity back in the afternoon, because so many hours of productivity are lost from people just basically trying to get through the afternoon with coffee and sugar and all that kind of thing. So they're finding that productivity increases and also quality of work increases with a power nap.
Wow.
So that's been proven.
That's amazing. It's, I guess culturally, look, I think it's the nap concept is very well accepted, in particularly in a lot of Mediterranean cultures. They often have time for siesta or relaxing time. But I guess in like a lot of Western cities, like this whole concept isn't well circulated, and it's very refreshing to hear that companies are actually finding productivity gains from really honouring the natural cycles of the human body and providing space for employees to take time out during the day.
Yeah, it's really great. I hope it keeps spreading.
Cool. Okay, this is a question that comes from Joe in the UK, and Joe asks, my sleeping pattern has been all over the place since my father died. How do I stop the chatter in my head when I go to bed?
Okay, so emotion is emotions can generate thoughts and hormones, and so learning how to release emotion and manage emotion and also thoughts is very useful for dealing with grief and all the thoughts that arise from emotion. So grief was something I actually dealt with a lot as a child, and found that that was something that definitely affected my sleep. So taking time to be with grief and different emotions can be really beneficial, obviously. And I'll generalize this just a little bit, but grief is an emotion that a lot of people find very difficult to really cope with, and often kind of put it to the side to an extent so they get on with life, so to speak. Because, you know, we do have to keep going even when someone dies. So it's things that we have to keep doing, and often working, and so often the emotions that come up when someone dies are pushed to the side. And then at night, when you lie down, is the time when those emotions come to the surface, because you're not busy and you're not doing and distracted from that. So they start to come up, and then that's followed by thinking and memories and all kinds of things. So this is it's a big thing to get over death, especially death of a parent. So taking time out in the evening to grieve and to release the emotions that are there and honour them and be very gentle with yourself would help a lot. And there's a lot of tools that I teach people to help them deal with these kinds of things and to release emotion and move through these difficult periods. And if you don't really get this under control, then it can escalate and just keep going. So again, back to patterns, these kinds of things like death or illnesses or divorce or big interruptions in your life in whatever way can start a sleeping problem. And then if it's not addressed and you don't start changing those patterns, can become really long term. So really taking care to not let that turn into a really long term issue is a good idea.
I just wanted to pick up on one thing you said there, Donna, about putting things to the side. And I was just wondering, like, is that a good signal for people to actually seek out the help and guidance of someone else? If the whatever the grief or the stress that has popped up in their life is too big to handle, that it's sidelined, but it's just sitting there. Like, is that a good sort of like alarm bell for someone to really know that it's time to work with someone who can help them, I guess, address and release it?
Yeah, definitely. When you become aware of it, because a lot of people aren't really aware of what they're doing, because just coping and getting through the day is such a norm for most people, and feeling quite numb to emotions and not feeling that you can really move through them and experience them. And yeah, so getting some help and learning tools to do that is helpful for everyone, because we all have these things to deal with. So, but definitely it's an alarm bell. There's lots of different people that can help. And once you decide that you'd like support and help, it's allowing that the person that's right for you to come, or seeking it out, asking a close friend if they've ever had someone help them through something, because it's not something a lot of people talk about. But, you know, and especially this topic of death, it's not something that we easily talk about to others. So. And even a very close friend, if we reach out to a close friend and ask, you know, can we talk? Can we spend some time together? So, yes, often a professional is a good idea, but if you can't do that for whatever reason, or then often someone close to you who you really trust, who's willing to be there and listen, then that can be really supportive as well.
Wow. Donna, we've actually come close to the end of our hour, and like we've just covered such a terrain of interesting insights and facts and experiences and case studies of the whole terrain of sleep. And like as I mentioned in the introduction, I think it's an area that isn't spoken about enough, given the fact that it's so so important in our overall health and well-being, and also just our day-to-day joy and experience of life. Now, I know that like we only had an hour today to chat, but I guess most of what you share will have actually opened some thoughts or ideas in people's minds about how they can actually start moving forward and really getting the sleep that they deserve. And they may be very, very curious to find out more about the work that you do and the private sessions that you run. And I was just wondering if you could actually share with people how they can get in contact with you and find out more information about your work and how they could possibly seek you out for a session.
Okay, so I give private sessions over the phone and via Skype to people all over the world. And the first session is 2 hours, and then the sessions get shorter from there. The reason the first session is long is because I need to really get an idea of what's happening for you personally. And so the first part of that session is kind of diagnostic. I'm listening and asking a lot of questions to find out what it is exactly that's happening for you mentally, emotionally, physically, and also in your environment and lifestyle. And then the second part is more practical. So I give you things to actually do and apply, and give you tools to switch off your mind and, basically get yourself changing patterns and able to fall asleep more easily. And then there's a week in between sessions. So you apply that, what I teach you, and then you come back a week later and we do another session, and then we further refine things if need be. And then the sessions get shorter, so they become 1 hour sessions. And all you need is a phone or Skype. And I have a website called naturalsleepspecialist.com. So that's naturalsleepspecialist.com, where you can read more about my sessions. There's also another website, donnacorey.com, where you can kind of read about other work I've done. But the naturalsleepspecialist.com site talks more about these online sessions. And I want to offer a special to people on the call today. The first session is usually $225 for the 2 hours, but I want to offer a $100 discount to anyone on the call today if they book in within the next week.
Wow.
So for that initial session.
Wow, that's a great offer.
Yeah, so you can email me from that website and just say that you've been on this call, and then I'll organise that you have that discount for your first session.
Wow, that's amazing. And and how do you actually find the Skype sessions from people calling in around the world?
Well, to be totally honest, I was very sceptical before I did my first Skype session. I was really quite resistant to it, and I'm a person who really likes contact and being kind of physically with people. And I was encouraged to do Skype sessions a long time ago, and I was very resistant. And so when I started, I was really surprised that they work so easily, so well. And I'm even finding that they're working even faster sometimes than my personal sessions.
Wow.
So, they're very focused. We're only looking at each other for the first, say, 10 to 15 minutes, so we can really meet properly and see each other, and I can see you, and then we go on to just phone. So it's very focused. Sometimes we have to go back onto video so I can show something, but usually I'm just guiding people through things because I've done it for so many years. I can do it actually without someone seeing me. So they're very successful, and I'm actually really enjoying them, and the fact that I can work with people all over the world, I'm finding it such a blessing.
Mm.
Great.
That's amazing. And another area that I just wanted to quickly explore as well, another thing I mentioned briefly in the introduction, is that you've been fully immersed out in Indonesia writing your first book, Sleeping Well Naturally. And I was just wondering if you could give people a heads up as to, what first of all, what your writing journey has been like, and also what they can expect when the book gets released.
Okay. Well, the writing journey's been interesting. I had a publisher come to me as a client, and he was a cynic and lovely man, and he overcame his sleeping problems really fast, and he really encouraged me to write this book. And again, at first I was a little bit not sure if it would work, because everyone's so individual and has such different reasons for not sleeping. But I've, over the last 2 years, formulated this this way of putting across this method that I've come up with, and it's very clear, 7 steps, and then a toolbox with about 35 tools, still not sure exactly how many, but it's about 35 tools, very practical tools. So the books are very practical and easy to use, very simple and straightforward. So as I'm editing it, it's getting a lot more straightforward, and, you know, it's really written for people who are tired. Like, there's no beating around the bush. There's not a lot of extra words, and it really gets straight to the point. So I'm really, really excited about it now. I had phases of, oh, my God, what am I doing? And will this work, which has been my biggest question. So now I've had quite a lot of feedback from different people, and I'm really there. It's going to be ready to go to the publisher in about a month's time. And then I'm not sure how long it's going to take to actually be on the shelves, but I'm guessing 6 to 8 months.
Well, great. And people can, yeah, can keep on top of that through your website?
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
So they can also email me and ask just to be kept on a mailing list as well.
Okay.
I've really enjoyed the writing process, actually. It's been very enriching, and, yeah, the thought of it reaching a lot of people is quite exciting.
Mm. That's excellent. Now, I don't know, I was just wondering if you had any closing words of advice that you may just want to just close the call on and offer out to people who would love to return to just really natural ways of sleeping and reinvigorating themselves.
So I'd like to say that there is hope, because a lot of people get to a very hopeless place and they're very, very exhausted and just surviving. So I want to say that you can feel good again and you can sleep well again. It just takes a little bit of change. And as you change what you're doing, thinking, and how you're living, just a little, your body wants to return to good sleep. And it can. So I just want to say that it's really possible, but change is required for change.
Mm.
So something needs to change for you to experience something different. And when you do start changing even a little, even if you just apply the things that I talked about today, you'll notice a difference.
Mm.
So, yeah, stay positive and start making some changes, and just know that you can sleep well. I've seen people in very bad states change their sleep and their well-being and the quality of life. And so it is possible. That's what I want to say. It really is possible. And don't give up. Keep going.
Cool.
Believe in yourself and your ability to change even these patterns, even if you've had them for 20 years.
Mm. Awesome. Well, that's a lovely thought to finish on. Change is required for change. Now, Donna, I really wanted to just take this opportunity to thank you so much for sharing like your work this evening. I know that you've put many, many years of research and personal development into these methods and techniques, and I just really wanted to thank you wholeheartedly for sharing them with us today. Like, I've personally made some very powerful distinctions that will certainly take my sleeping to the next level. So I just wanted to thank you personally, but and also thank you on behalf of everyone who's had the opportunity to tune in from around the world.
It's my pleasure, Damien. It's been really nice. Actually, I've had some candles on, very low lights. The rooster has started outside already. I don't know that you can hear that one because it's quite far away, but yeah. I was born at exactly this time, actually.
Oh, wow.
And I do like getting up kind of early, not this early, usually. But it's been nice. It's been good. So thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for this great work that you're doing. It's really inspiring, and I really appreciate the work that you're doing to bring lots of information to people and to give me the opportunity to share this, which I really feel passionate about and love to share with people. So thank you too.
My pleasure. And this call wouldn't be complete without thanking you all at home. Literally, this space that we hold week to week is a very powerful one and a uniting one. So wherever you are tuning in around the world, I just wanted to thank you for sharing your inspiration week to week, for sending in your questions. They're always thought-provoking, always inspiring for the guests that we have on the program. Now, for those of you who would love to share this inspiring work with other people, this call will be made available for free on the People You Should Meet website first thing tomorrow morning. So just check back to the recordings page and you will see the recording archive there. Now, one thing I would encourage everyone to do is if you feel this material could change the life of a loved one, a friend, a colleague, relative, please do take that first step forward of actually sharing this material as freely and as liberally as possible. It's by taking these small little action steps forward and by really offering out a helping hand that we actually change the world for the better. So I do encourage you all to take that step if you feel moved to. Great, so that brings us to the end of our call this evening. And yeah, I just wanted to thank you once again, Donna. Amazing that you made it at 3 a.m. in the morning in Indonesia. Like, we really appreciate you getting up so early to share your wealth of insight. And thank you, everyone at home, whatever time zone you happen to be in.